Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we are on the eve of training camp beginning. And the Ravens have a number of questions, and I wanted to go over one particular subgroup that has some things to prove, and that is the returning sophomore class, the second-year players. Now, I'm going to specifically say we're excluding two players who've obviously earned a starting job and are in no danger of losing it, and those are Roger Rosengarten and Nate Wiggins. So we certainly don't need to talk about them. But there are a number of other sophomore players that are in a much more precarious position. In some cases, may not make the roster this year. In other cases, they have an opportunity in front of them that they really need to make the most of in this training camp and preseason, and will have a limited opportunity to do so. So I want to go through those, but we talk through them, and just a solo episode should be fairly short today. I have a couple other things I want to add at the end. But let's start on the offensive line with one of the big ones, seventh round draft pick last year, Nick Samak, is fighting this year for one of the last offensive line spots. There is certainly hope that were he to win a job this year, he might be one of the players considered to replace Linderbaum if the Ravens and he cannot come to terms. I don't think he's really in the running for that anymore. Obviously, if he gets cut this year and a player like Dellinger or even Holski is viewed as a player ahead of him on the depth chart at center, Darian Dalcourt is also still around. So Nick Samak is a player who needs to stay healthy, be getting all the second team center reps that he can this year, such that the Ravens consider him strongly for 2026. And of course, the Ravens, if Linderbaum departs, they well could draft another center. The selection might come in a later round than it did this last time. Ravens obviously have had some good success and some not so good success drafting centers. Jason Brown ended up being a very good center for the Ravens for the period he was here. Gino Gradkowski did not. And, you know, they've had some other issues as well. They've done reasonably well with a couple undrafted guys. Matt Skura, I think, was a very solid value for what he was. Cologne would be another guy. Bradley Bozeman, a sixth round pick, ended up moving to center before he left. But the Ravens could go that route again. And it wouldn't shock me if they used a second or third round pick, even on a center. It would shock me if they went into the first round again. I think they've kind of been through the pitfalls with Linderbaum. Also, Linderbaum was a kind of a unusually good player that, you know, the argument was made by more teams than just the Ravens that he was worth a first round pick, but it does come with all of the negatives that come along, the lack of frictions in getting a player for a second contract. And that's really showing up now. They couldn't offer Linderbaum a fifth year option because it was priced out by the fact that other linemen are grouped with that. They couldn't offer him a franchise tag next year for the same reasons. Basically, it's going to be astronomically expensive. It won't make any sense. And it'll change the nature of the negotiation. That was also the case with the fifth-year option. So I think they're trying to work with Linderbaum on a deal. Obviously, we've talked about that a number of times on the show before. That could get gummed up by the fact that Cam Jurgens was signed for an absurd amount of money relative to his actual play. And that Creed Humphrey is at $18 million AAV, is really at the top of the center class and deserves to be there. So the question is, how much less than $18 million do you want to pay Linderbaum? And that's really where it comes in. If the Ravens and Linderbaum can't come to terms, and that's always a risk, then the Ravens have to be ready with other alternatives. And Nick Samak could be on that list if he shows out this preseason. He actually did play pretty well in last year's preseason in a very limited kind of a role. I think he actually had one 15-play drive against the Eagles or in that game that was a exceptionally good, and that was a lot of his preseason performance. So Nick Samek is the first. And number two is Rasheen Ali, coming into his second year. Also, of course, last year he was off and on part of the team. He had some injuries, and then he came back and he played. The Ravens were, before he returned, were using multiple players for multiple weeks of practice squad elevations. You remember John Kelly and Chris Collier? Neither of them made the team, but they were available for the their maximum number of practice squad elevations. None of them ever got a carry, but they played special teams, and that's what the Ravens needed a third running back for. Otherwise, Hill and Henry got all the running back snaps for a long time, and it wasn't until fairly deep in the season that Ali finally got the first RB3 carry, I believe. And then after that, Keaton Mitchell came back and got some RB3 carries, most notably in that Texans game where he played a little bit and had some time. But Rasheen Ali enters this year as the fourth running back in a three-man group. Not the place you want to be for a team that's not known for carrying four running backs. In fact, they may do with two last year. But there is one factor that's in his favor that might help him either get a spot or be the first man that's available for a spot as soon as an injury occurs. I think that might be the case anyway. But that is the new kickoff return rules. And the point has been made that kickoff returns under the new system are a lot like zone block run plays. Okay, running plays with zone blocking. And running backs are exceptionally well suited to read the field and pick their hole on such plays. Keaton Mitchell looked terrific in that role last year. Ali also had some success on kickoffs. He had a couple of nice kickoff returns. Maybe he's another guy they want back there. The Ravens have already pulled Justice Hill off special teams, which that's a big deal because Justice Hill was one hell of a special teams player. And I don't think they'd want to have him on just to return kicks. I think that would be taking too much of a risk with a big part of their offense. They might do it if they move Keaton Mitchell to kickoff return duties, and then he takes over as in the running back role to such a degree that they can't risk him on the back end on kick returns. I think that could happen, and then Hill might return to special teams under those circumstances and take a more limited third down role as a running back. But anyway, you can see Ali's perilous position here is that everybody ahead of him has eyes on a bigger running back job. Obviously, Derrick Henry has it now, and Hill and Keaton Mitchell are both ahead of him on the totem pole. Ali's situation is more precarious because he's been known kind of as a fumbler in his career. A fumble on returns is not going to be tolerated by John Harbaugh, an old special teams coach. But in addition, I just feel like that risk would be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So if he comes out some point in the preseason, maybe even in camp, has a fumble or two, that's not going to be something that's going to be well received, and I think it would kind of seal his fate. And even with the avoiding fumbles, he has an uphill battle to try and make this team, and he probably needs something to break his way, an injury or potentially another depth breakdown, even in a different position. Maybe Ricard is hurt and they don't really carry a fullback. That might give them, an extra spot that they would use on a running back. It'd be that sort of thing that could give him a chance. Let's move on here, though. We'll talk about Bo Brade. Now, one sec. Bo Brade, among players in the secondary, he's among all players, he's probably the 53rd man on the roster as I see it right now. I think he's got a role, and I have him making the team just over David Ajabo. Ajabo had a number of snaps last year, but I don't see him as a fourth-year player beating out Adisa Isaac for the fifth outside linebacker snap. Fifth outside linebacker spot. Bo Brade, I think, is probably the fifth safety on the team right now, and that's after, let me read them off, Malachi Starks, Kyle Hamilton. You can call it Sanusi Kane. My number four guy is not on team, and my number five guy is Bo Brade. So it's just a little bit like having Scott Mitchell as the 10th best left-handed quarterback of all time and having the field be number nine. But Bo Brade's position is also, he's on the bubble right now. He's a guy who clearly would hang around if he was on the practice squad, and I think the Ravens could make use of him there. He needs to, this preseason, there's an opportunity in front of him because the Ravens haven't gone out and gotten that veteran yet. If he plays well, proves he can play a half-field role on the back end, which is really the critical additional function he needs to fill, then I think his special teams slash half-field role would solidify his spot on the team, and the Ravens would be happy not to spend money on a veteran safety. If he isn't able to do that, then I think the Ravens could easily go out and get a Chuck Clark or another guy who's a veteran and cheap but knows where to be on a football field, and they could find him and decide that they can get rid of Bo Braid or relegate Bo Braid to the practice squad where he'd be elevated as needed. So in any case, Bo Braid needs to stay healthy. He needs to get in his time in these preseason games. Talk about that a little bit more, how concentrated the need to be healthy on certain days this camp is. And we'll get into that a little bit later. The fourth player on the list is Adisa Isaac. So the problem with Isaac is I don't think the Ravens are going to give up on him this year, but I think they could be put into a position where they are offered a coward's way out that I'll describe in a moment here, is that we think of them as having a choice to either cut him or keep on the roster, but there is a third alternative, and that is putting him on IR. Well, Isaac already missed a ton of time last year in camp and the preseason, which was big developmental holdback for him due to injuries. And that was, it was very unfortunate. I believe he got hurt in the first preseason game, might've been early in the second, but it was one of those two. And so, you know, he already has missed a lot of developmental time because of this. If he were to do the same this year, then I think even though they might want to keep him, they might keep him on as player 54 or 55 on that IR, one of those two IR DTR slots, where he could then come back later in the year, practice with the team. And by the way, that's something Ravens love to do, is keep players around who will be mid-season replacements. So that's certainly a possibility for a player like Adisa Isaac. And I would not be surprised at all if that's the way that plays out. With regard to Ajabo, I think he beats out Ajabo based on his 3 years to one remaining under contract. So that to me, it's a no-brainer in that regard. I don't think Ajabo has shown enough that he would beat out Adisa Isaac for that spot. If it were Ajabo to have a fantastic camp in preseason, sure, that could change. In particular, if the opportunity is given for Isaac to be slipped onto the 54th or 55th spot, then it's a possibility. Does have some additional salary cap costs that the Ravens would then have to bear from that. I don't think they're crazy about doing that. There is actually some value to cutting Ajabo because his original second round pick made him a more expensive than normal player. So there's a little bit of value from cutting him there in terms of cap savings. Moving on, now we have Sanusi Kane. Now, Kane, I'd say currently, based on the OTAs that I've seen, has the upper hand on that third safety spot. Now, the fact that we're talking about the third safety spot as Sanusi Kane, to me, is very dangerous. It's not at all the guy I would want to have there. And I knew full well this summer we're going to see a lot of Kane and Braid attempting to prove they can play that split field role. And it would be fantastic if one of them would hit. Each one is about maybe a 30% chance. So you got, you know, they're not completely independent things, but each one, we'll just call it, it's about a 30% chance to maybe hit. Kane, maybe he's 35 and Braid is 25 or 20, that kind of thing. But Kane has gotten a lot of coach speak so far, and he's made a play or two on the back end. I don't think it's anything where we can say we're close to knowing that he'd be in the right place on the football field, which is really the problem the Ravens have had at safety. Now, what Kane does have going for him is his roster spot's not in jeopardy. So he's a very good special teams player. He's made his tackles. He's proved himself in that regard. If he does not play well on the back end, he still has a spot as a special teams player slash dimeback. or perhaps the next safety down the totem pole, the fourth safety, if the Ravens go out and get a veteran. If they got Chuck Clark, maybe Chuck Clark's the guy who plays in dime packages, or he plays a nickel when Hamilton's playing a big nickel closer to the line of scrimmage. But if he doesn't play well, he's missed a big opportunity to advance his career. Sanusi Kane has, because this is his opportunity. I mean, the Ravens are desperate for him to fill that role, or for Braid to do it. And if neither of them can, well, they'll look elsewhere and they'll move on. And I don't think Kane is part of the discussion again next year. I don't think that they'd expect for him to be a guy who can step up and do it better. So anyway, the other possibility, if they didn't go outside the organization to get that safety, is that they could convert one of their excess cornerbacks. And this team is currently carrying 8 corners who I think are all capable of being above the line for their spot on the outside corner, or just the cornerback totem pole. So Longer Beam is like an extra slot corner. We have extra outside corners, JAD and Kone. TJ Tampa, they may be fighting it out for the fifth spot on the outside. It's a very packed room, and there's already been talk about JAD moving to safety. Now, by the way, people, if you're reading the media, aggregators are going to tell you a different story. I'll tell you right now, the total amount of effort they've expended into trying to get JAD to play safety is a handful of snaps so far, a handful. So it's not like he's been back there every day.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hey, and oh my God, it's a pending thing is here because there's no other opportunity. I think JAD, they really still consider a corner. And they've given him a little bit of emergency time at safety to try and see if anything will happen. They gave Ben Cleveland time at center, and that lasted until a couple bad snaps occurred. These things happen. They give players chances at other positions, and it sometimes works out and sometimes it doesn't. And I don't think there's nothing compelling from my point of view that would tell me that JAD would be particularly successful at safety. When I don't think he's really done it at corner, and he has more of that rail thin frame that I don't normally associate with being a good tackling safety. So we'd have to see if that were to work out. I think it's possible he'll see the second half of a football game this summer on the back end. And that would be interesting, exciting if it did. I mean, they've got Kendre Jackson and Igbinosen, I expect to get most of the time of the second half of games, which is really, that's the Ravens saying we don't care about these games anymore. If they were to put in a player like JAD, it's almost like what they did with Daryl Worley, that they're trying to see if you've got a guy who can puppeteer the quarterback. I don't have any faith at all that JAD would be able to do that the way Daryl Worley did in that. I believe it was the last win in their long preseason win streak was basically all about Daryl Worley coming in and dominating the second half of the game. I'm not of a belief that the JAD can do that, but they may give him a chance and look at the point of entry. Don't listen to the camp talk because it's all going to be bullshit and all the stuff with regard to coach speak. Don't believe a bit of it, or at least look at it and really see, is Harbaugh using his alliterative style that really is where he goes to the extra effort to praise a player for some specific thing and it really seems real? Or is he using his normal coach speaky style, or a defensive backs coach talking about his intelligence or something like that? I'm not buying any of that crap. I want to see him on the field. I want to see him on the field for a lot of snaps. I want to see it work out if he's going to be the guy. But for right now, and we were talking about Sanusi Kane clearly is the next man up in that safety spot as the room is constituted right now. Might not stay that way, but Kane has an opportunity this summer to lock down that spot. Next guy on the list is number 6, TJ Tampa. Okay, now we all know the story with TJ Tampa. He came out of Iowa State with absolutely fantastic coverage metrics, 4.90 yards per target in his senior year with a 54.8 opposition passer rating. But the speed is what held him down into the fourth round at 4.59. What I'll say about, you know, a 40 time is I don't look exclusively certainly at the 40 time, but it's kind of a necessary but not sufficient for a lot of cornerbacks. And every 0.01 worse you are, particularly in the 4.5s, is where I look at the kind of the inflection point of your hopefulness for cornerback success. So Daryl Worley, I think, was a 4.64 or something coming out of school, and they immediately moved him to safety. They said, no, you're not playing corner anymore. I know, though, he did play a little bit of cornerback in his NFL career, mostly for teams that didn't really have an option at that point. He was really made a safety immediately because of that speed. I think that Tampa is a guy, because he's 6'2", 200, so he's very big for a corner to start with. You either got to make a commitment to seeing what you can get out of him as a press corner, which might mean he's a good third down corner for you, because, you know, third and medium is very hard to defend in the NFL. You want good press coverage, and that's a place where TJ Tampa could really help you. He won't have a down by down opportunity like that with the Ravens unless things go drastically wrong. So you're really trying to figure out what's the best long-term position for TJ Tampa to play, and the Ravens may decide that's safety. So we'll see if he has the instincts to play that position. I don't think there's any question that 4.59 is plenty fast enough if you've got good instincts. In fact, 4.75 or 4.80 is probably fast enough if you've got really good instincts at safety. But at 4.59, I think he'd be fine, and he seems to have the body for it. He wasn't a perfect tackler by any sense in college, but he is a bigger guy, and maybe the Ravens can have him improve in that area, particularly when they play some good teams at the end of 23. He had some trouble tackling. Like Texas, I'm remembering that game, and there were some problems tackling in that game, among others. So anyway, we'll see. Tampa had 9 games on special teams last year, but it was a split set. I'll talk. He was active early in the year, then he was active later in the year, and they had a lot of healthy scratches in the middle of the year. So he needs to play a bigger role in 2025 there, and it would be nice if he were to get an actual I don't know if it'd be nice for the Ravens. It'd be nice for him personally, I think, if he were to get a trial at safety this summer. If he doesn't, then the Ravens either have the problem solved because Kane and Brady are playing well, say, or Kane is playing well and they go out the organization for a fourth or whatever it might be. But maybe JED steps up and looks good there. But if Tampa, Tampa's probability of succeeding in the NFL and being a valuable player, I think would increase if he were to get some safety snaps this year. And if I were TJ Tampa or TJ Tampa's agent, I'd be telling him, you know, go to the coaches now and tell them, hey, I want to learn safety too. Maybe my body type is better for this in the NFL. I'm not the fastest guy. I understand that, but I think I have good instincts and I can read the quarterback from the back end. Can you give me a chance there? And that might be exactly what the Ravens are frankly looking for, is somebody to raise their hand and say, yeah, I'd like to do that. All right. So TJ Tampa, he's number 6. The last of the 7 is Devontae Walker. Now, I've talked about this on other pods, so I'm sure people know probably already what I think Walker needs to do, and that's develop complementary comeback routes that magnify and exploit his value as a deep threat. Magnify his value as a deep threat because anytime you stutter, you give yourself a chance to beat your opposite number deep, but also to exploit it, because when you're showing that you can go deep, your opposing quarterbacks are going to be a little bit slower to break downhill, and they're also going to turn their hips more quickly. And if you can read that and know what you're doing at the top of the stem, then he's got a chance to, you know, make his living as a good comeback receiver. He needs that. He's got to have that to go with the vertical threat. He's very fast at 4.36, but his body type does not lend itself well to big separation based on, size, need to sink his hips to decelerate, which a player like Zay Flowers or LaJonte Wester does not have. But he does. He really gives away a lot to the corner when he sinks his hips. He's a guy who needs to have that complementary route structure. So that's important. He did play a lot of special teams last year. It was actually, I've quoted different things, but it was 11 of the final 14 weeks he played, was active for special teams, 253 snaps. I say for special teams, he obviously played some offense as well. He needs to be a better tackler. He had 2 special teams tackles and 5 misses last year. Now, first of all, before you get all upset about that number, it's not unusual for players to have, a 60 or 50% tackle rate or tackle conversion rate on special teams. It's always in the open field, so tackles are more difficult. And, if he's a gunner, which he would typically be on a punt, then he's going to be in the worst possible position to basically overrun the return man. He just needs to get a little better at that role. So he's indispensable there, and that will create offensive opportunities for him. So the Ravens aren't ready to give up on by any stretch, but he has a big developmental hurdle in front of him. And that's got to mostly happen this summer for him to figure out, how am I going to get those complementary routes that I need in my game. Now, there's some common threads in all of these, and there are 3 that I can see. The first is there are 5 enormous days not to be injured if you're a Baltimore Raven second year player or a rookie, whoever needs the reps. Those 5 specifically are August 5th when they have the joint practice with the Colts, August 7th for the first game, August 16th for the game against the Cowboys, August 21st joint practice against the Commanders, and August 23rd is the game against the Commanders. With only 3 preseason games, the Ravens are fortunate to have scheduled 2 joint practices. And I think they did the right thing, by the way, not to have a lot of bad blood over a 2-day kind of feud building, fight build up kind of thing. They did 1 day with each team. I think they're going to try and watch it very closely. They probably hope that each side is really trying to monitor their own guys, and maybe they even pick the teams for that. But they have as good an opportunity for joint practices as any team does. And, a team with a extremely set roster like the Ravens have, very deep, very set. This is the opportunity for those guys to get snaps. And there are a lot of snaps available. I mean, Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid could play essentially the entire first half. We'll see, Keandre Jackson and Igbinosun in the second half for a significant time. In fact, I would expect them to play the whole game and the whole rest of the game and close it out, unless the Ravens have somebody else they're trying to groom into the position. So those 5 big days are huge. The other thing I mentioned for Adisa Isaac is true of multiple players, is injury for any of these guys could let the Ravens take the coward's way out and make these guys spot 54 or spot 55 or even spot 56. By the way, 54 and 55 are now designated as IRDTR, and you don't have to do anything special. But remember, the Ravens are the master manipulators of the roster, and they can get a guy on at 56 or 57 if they need a handshake deal done. I have looked through, there's not a lot of handshake deal guys on the entire Ravens roster right now, so it would be, they really need to make use of spots 54 and 55 more than they have in past years, and they might be somewhat limited, but they don't have like a Brent Urban around this year that they can easily make into a handshake deal guy. The third thing is the opportunity cost and opportunity lost. So this is particularly true in the DB group, that this is an opportunity and it's a relatively brief window that is open for players to change position, to say, put their hand up for it, to respond, hell yeah, when the coach comes to me about a position change. This is a relatively small opportunity because the Ravens only really have that one hole on the entire roster at safety. Could they use maybe another veteran guard? Well, maybe. You know, I'm not tied to Nick Samak being on the roster, so yeah, sure, they could do that. Would they be okay picking up an edge rusher? Well, no, actually, that's not a spot where I think there's room. They'd have to actually get rid of both of Adisa Isaac and Ajabo in order to sign a Jadeveon Clowney or something. I don't think they're looking to do that. They need to stay as young and cheap as they can. The opportunity, believe me, is going to come up next year to sign veteran pass rushers to supplement Mike Green, who might be the only one left. So Van Noy could be gone in free agency. Owe could be gone in free agency. And they're going to really need to work their magic next year. But this year, I think they want to play the hand they've got. They've got Tavius Robinson, who's a terrific early down player. And they've got Adisa Isaac, who still has upside. They've got Mike Green, who could be fantastic. And they've got Van Noy, and of course they've got Owe, who already are proven pass rushers that I think you have a good baseline on what they might produce for you this year. So I don't think there's room for a veteran pass rusher. And if you go through the positions, I mean, there just isn't room for much of anything. The Ravens, have decided who they have at most of their position groups, at defensive line, inside linebacker, tight end, wide receiver, fullback, quarterback. There's just not an open spot, any of those positions. On special teams, you have a kicker battle that's already going on. That's not going to involve going out and getting someone outside the organization. At running back, I talked a little bit about Ali, but I really do expect them to carry three. And Ali will either make it by default or he'll be on the practice squad or offered a practice squad spot, I probably should say. But I don't see him as a guy who makes it based on what he does in camp, other than he needs to stay healthy, he needs to be ready, and he probably needs to not fumble. But he doesn't need to, break off 220-yard runs in the preseason or anything like that for the Ravens to believe in him. He just needs to hold on to the football, basically. And then the offensive line, they could make a signing, but, they're basically, this team is so, the roster is so deep right now that nothing is going to happen unless injury provides that opportunity. So when you've got one hole on the roster, the fifth cornerback and the sixth cornerback and the seventh cornerback on the roster, and the eighth for that matter, should all be raising their hands and saying, hey, you need me, coach? I'll take some reps back there. And I hope they are. And Tampa in particular would be a good one for that. And Kane and Brady to take advantage of the situation while it's here. Well, thanks for listening, folks. Really appreciate the listens recently. If you want to do something nice, go out and write us a 5-star, 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform. Really appreciate the extreme loyalty in terms of the listens and what's going on. And can't say enough, frankly, for it. If you have questions, hit me up with hashtag film study mailbag. I'm going to start that for camp, and we'll talk through those in camp on Friday morning GM each week. And then I'll also have camp notes coming out on a daily basis, and they'll be after camp, either later that evening or possibly the next morning in some cases, for each day, the camp. There are 25 practices planned, that, are open to the media. So I'll plan to be there for most, if not all of those. And, I certainly will be producing something that's similar to what you've heard before from me in terms of camp notes each day. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.